Hi, and welcome to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the writer Vijay Nair. Vijay Nair was born in Jamshedpur and went to school in Jamshedpur and Pune. He graduated from St. Xavier's College, Calcutta. He went on to acquire a postgraduate diploma in personnel management and industrial relations from XLRI Jamshedpur. After more than a decade in the corporate world, he attended a playwriting workshop conducted by Mahesh Dattani in 2000. Then in 2001, he set up his own theater group called Still Waters. Vijay Nair wrote and directed his first play entitled Scars in My Memory in 2001. In 2002, the National Award-winning film director Prakash Belawadi directed his second play entitled Weeds. Vijay was the script consultant for Stumble, which won the National Award for Best English Language Film in 2003. Drawn Quill Publishers bought out his first collection of plays, The Gloomy Rabbit and other plays, in that same year. Other awards include the British Council Charles Wallace Award and Writer in Residence at the University of Canterbury. In 2006, Vijay Nair's first novel, Master of Life Skills, was launched by HarperCollins India. In 2007, he was invited to the 40th International Writers Program offered by the University of Iowa. He was sponsored by the Bureau of Cultural and Educational Affairs at the U.S. Department of State. As a fellow of this program, he has given talks and readings at George Washington University, Point Park University, Chatham College, and the University of Iowa. His latest play, entitled Dust Motes from a Sunbeam, had a staged reading at the New York Theater Workshop with director Sturgis Warner. Vijay was also invited by City of Asylum for a residency in Pittsburgh. He lives in Bangalore with his wife and son. So welcome, Vijay. We're so happy to have you here.
Thank you, Jan. I'm very happy to be here, too.
And I guess you're going to start with an essay that you have written.
Yeah, I'll do that. And it's an essay that I wrote for, I was invited for talks to Point Park University and Chatham College. And this is an essay that I prepared mainly for students and who are aspiring to be creative writers. So thank you for giving me an opportunity to read it on this show. It's called The Journey. How much is enough is a question I ask myself repeatedly in this country that believes even in saving daylight. When I arrived in Pittsburgh and was given a large house just to sit and write, my delight led me to explore all nooks and corners. When I opened one of the drawers in the kitchen shelf, I discovered a plastic apparatus in baby pink. I picked it up gingerly in my hands and discovered four small bowls fitting into one another. It took me a while to figure out that what I was holding in my hand was a set of measuring bowls. It warmed my heart, this act of consideration among many others from my kind and generous hosts. I must confess, I have never used them, even though I cook. I just resort to my instincts when I take out the rice or the lentil or sugar, as I have done while cooking all these years in my own country. But sometimes I do take the measuring bowls out and keep them along with whatever else I need, just in case something goes wrong with my measurement and tells on the cooking. I don't know how the measuring bowls would help afterwards, but they have been an important psychological crutch, especially on the day I cooked for a few friends I made in the city. Writing to me is like cooking, more of an instinctive and intuitive thing rather than something that I do after consulting a recipe book. In the 7 years that I have been writing, I have equipped myself with some knowledge about the craft of writing. I understand plot points and conflicts and keep that knowledge handy when I sit down to write plays. I know about the twist in the end and the internal world that formally defines the short story. I know how novels can also profit from brevity. I still struggle with poetry, though. That's a form that constantly eludes despite all the readings I do on the subject. Foolishly, I like to believe I can make my prose lyrical. Maybe that's where the measuring cups come in. Knowing the tools does not always help me to articulate my truths in whatever form or medium I may choose. On the other hand, ignoring the rules sometimes has given me works that I have felt good about afterwards. And that may be because I'm a writer by accident. I started to write after going through a personal crisis. I'd engaged with the corporate world after graduating from a business school in India and discovered, despite the financial rewards, I was asked to lead a dry and thankless existence, devoid of replenishments. I stopped going to work one day. That upset a lot of people, friends and family, especially my mother. She could finally articulate once again all the judgments she had passed on me as a child. That I would end up as no good, that I had no sense of responsibility, that I was lazy and wanted things easy in my life. The paradox of that last judgment makes me smile today. If I wanted things easy in my life, being a writer for the medium of stage seems a particularly stupid thing to do, especially since the alternative would have been to just agree to whatever my boss would have to say at the workplace and get a bigger house and a bigger car in the bargain. It was the dilemma of being the man and the provider in the society that I come from that led me to write and stage my first play, Scars in My Memory. The play was about six men who go for a trek in the Himalayas with a big group, but these six lose their way and find themselves stranded in a desolate place, not knowing whether they would be able to survive the cold. They start telling each other their stories, and that gave the play its substance. It took me a few years to realize how much of myself I had revealed through the dramatic endeavor of mine. Not only was there a bit of me in each of the six characters, I was also telling the tale from the psychological location I found myself in at that time, cold, desolate, and not knowing whether I would survive the night. Fortunately, the play struck a chord with the audience, and I had a new identity of a theater person. I continued to feel like a pariah and a loser, feeling sad and angry in turns. I was helping out with a stage production that a friend of mine was putting up when the production manager came and told us some planes were attacking US. All of us who were part of the crew started laughing. The notion that anybody could attack the mighty giant seemed a ludicrous enough phenomena to pass off as a silly joke. It was that fateful day in September when meanings and history and memory all joined hands together to demand reinterpretation. My concerns were more immediate, of course. I had a really close friend in New York who lived and taught in the city. I worried for him because of the event, and since he is a Muslim, because of the aftermath too. The emails I exchanged with him provided the foundation for the next full-length play I would write, Weeds, the title being inspired by another friend in India who shared with me once that her parents had many other preoccupations and so they let their children grow up like weeds. This was a more ambitious play, where a pair of star-crossed lovers exchange letters after the 9/11 tragedy while their shared past in Calcutta unfolds simultaneously. I'm going to read from this play after this paper has been shared. It's my favorite among the ones I have penned, although it has been criticized for being sentimental and didactic. My only defense is tragedies of this scale call for sentiments and some learning, as humanity never seems to draw any lesson here and elsewhere from the much bandied truth that wars and acts of terror never end anything. They just trigger more pain and more anguish. I decided to stand on a pulpit after my second play, and so my next two plays, Shadows on the Wall and The Window, were on child sexual abuse and marital rape. I'd fallen into the trap of wanting to point out issues in our society that are traditionally met with stoic silence. It is to the credit of the actors and directors I had for these productions that these works, less theatre and more social activism, passed muster. They also led to the commissioning of a play to raise awareness about autism. I called it The Gloomy Rabbit, and an actor who played a major part in the production brought back the joke going around in Bangalore theatre circles. The crazy bunny is now doing The Gloomy Rabbit. We laughed at that. I, of course, laughed a bit uncertainly. The Gloomy Rabbit led to my first publication, a collection of plays that were taken up by a generous publisher, a little after 2 years of my writing adventure. That stoked the hunger, and I wrote more plays, staged them, wrote a novel, got it published. I was invited for a couple of prestigious residencies like the current one I'm doing here. I know I lucked out. The law of averages was bound to catch up after the dismal showing in the corporate world. So that, in a nutshell, has been my journey as a writer. It has drawn from various identities I have assumed over the years. That of a failure, that of an angry paper vigilante, that of a despairing and defeated social activist, that of a crazy bunny. Someday I would open the recipe book, get the measuring cups out, and bake the perfect literary offering. Give me some time. And when that happens, I'll come again, if not to you, then to a gathering similar to this, and introduce myself. I'm a writer, and writing is what I do to make this existence worthwhile. Thank you.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the writer Vijay Nair, and he's reading from his work. That's a great, great essay.
Thank you. Thank you, Jan.
There's so much in there. Not sure where to start, but when you were reading, you were smiling, and we were all smiling here in this room when you said, you know, I stopped going to work one day. Because that's, I think, one of everyone's fantasies, especially those of a writer. You know, certainly an exhilarating thought. And but can you talk about that moment sort of what made you stop going and the prices paid, and you allude to it a little bit in the essay, you know, mm-hmm. talking about how forbidden that is in your culture, you know, as the man and the provider in a society that you come from. And can you talk about that? What led up to that in that moment? I stopped going to work one day.
Yes. As a matter of fact, I was working for an American multinational at that point of time. And actually, I mean, my first trips to America were because of this organization. And I really had a great time when I had come here for my training. But like all multinationals, they wanted a single uniform culture to prevail in all the offices across the world. And I was the person chosen to do that. So when I went back to India, I was not very popular because of the agenda that I had. And after a while, I realized that I was caught squarely in the middle. That became more and more difficult to handle because we had just had our son at that time. And we had really looked forward to having a child. But what I wasn't really prepared for was all the stress that also comes with a new child in the house, and to deal with the child in the house and then go to work and find, in a way, cornered by both the sides became more and more difficult. So I just said that I'm not going to be able to take this anymore. Mm-hmm. And there were a couple of months when I was feeling really low, and I sought professional help and went and met people and went and met doctors and was on medication for a brief while. And then my wife suggested that, you know, you've always been interested in writing, so there is this playwriting workshop. And we knew Mahesh Dattani. He is a friend of ours. And she said, why don't you just go and, mm-hmm. you know, attend it? It's just a month long, and it's in the evenings. And by that time, I had started connecting to the world again. So I had taken up another job, and I had started going to work. But I continued to feel disoriented. But this workshop was fabulous. I don't really remember writing anything in that workshop. But the fact that, like, you know, there were this bunch of people and we were always talking about writing and books and films and theater, that helped me open my mind and look at alternatives that I hadn't even considered. And then there was this, you know, as part of the workshop, one of the requirement was that we need to write a couple of scenes. And there was an actors' workshop which was being held simultaneously. And the actors were meant to workshop the scenes that we had written. And I hadn't been able to write a thing until the end. And then, like, you know, I just got back after the last class feeling really upset. And my son had turned two and he was going through this, you know, terrible two phenomena where we had to sort of carry him half the time when he would wake up in the nights and cry. And of course, I mean, like, we really tried to be good parents, but after a while, I think we just gave up and we sort of, you know, started telling him things like, please sleep, otherwise the boogeyman would come. and he, of course, didn't understand what the boogeyman was. And so he just cried a little more. So it wasn't, you know, one night the lights went off all of a sudden. I mean, like, power cuts and load shedding is a pretty frequent phenomenon in India even today. And we lit candles and he kind of, you know, pointed to the flickering shadow on the wall on that night when I got back from the workshop. And he sort of lisped shadow, you know, and he looked really scared. And so instead of writing a scene, I sat that night and I wrote a play called Shadows on the Wall, which was about terrors, real terrors that children deal with. So that was the beginning.
Yeah. And, you know, when you left work that day, you could have never imagined how that would go. But you know, it seems like you just have to give up and let things happen.
I thought, you know, my life was over and like... I was a failure and I would never really recover from this. And what kind of a role model would I be for my son? I mean, I went through some really intense feelings. But I'm glad I did, because if I hadn't, I wouldn't be writing today.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Well, why don't you read something, another piece?
Yes. I think what I would do is I would... read a piece from my first published novel, Master of Life Skills, which was launched last year. When I came to the U.S., I spent some time at Lincoln, Nebraska, so, 10 years ago. So this particular passage goes back to that.
That must have been quite a culture shock.
Actually, no, because what I realized was that people who work in corporates are pretty much the same everywhere, all over the world, you know. We all have the same concerns, mortgage for the house, education of children, and it wasn't all that different. So I'll read this passage.
Okay, that'd be great.
Shanti got a mail from Shorbani informing her of Vipul's death. The mail was long and desultory. It spoke of the years the two of them had shared with Vipul. A time, Shorbani claimed, Shanti and she had been really close. The mail ended with a plea for a renewal of ties. Keep in touch, the mail said. We have drifted apart. Shanti found Shorbani's words distasteful. A little like the snow in the morning, which had surprised her on her way to the car and covered her hair, her coat, and her shoes. Her hands had been spared because she had pushed them vigorously into her pockets. She thought the snow had the texture of a dead reptile. She had adapted to everything else about Lincoln, Nebraska. She shopped after consulting the newspapers about the sales that were on offer for the week. She always took the car, even to the corner supermarket. She never walked in the streets, fearing the tornadoes. She made believe her solitary life in the apartment was the only one she had known. A week after she came to the city, she went to the pet shop. She acquired a cat and gave it what she thought was a Midwest name, Larry. The pet deserted her. One evening, she came back to find it gone. it snowed for the next 2 days, making it impossible for her to venture out. She called the police. They were polite but unsympathetic. Larry was never found. Assuming a new identity was not difficult. Lincoln was the kind of city where no one asked too many questions. It was a cold city. It was as cold as Bombay had been hot. People sometimes woke up and found they could not open their eyelids because the cold had crept in and settled on them like frost. The university where she had enrolled for a PhD guaranteed her anonymity. She shuddered off the feel of snow as she walked into her house after finishing her weekly grocery shopping on that Saturday. She took a warm, soothing bath. Then she switched on her PC and read Shorbani's mail with trepidation. The mail had bad news highlighted as the subject. The language of the mail was ingratiating and offensive. Shanti felt the same distaste that Shorbani had always managed to bring on whenever they had interacted in the past, creeping up on her. For a long time, she pondered the screen. She felt violated. Not because she had to learn of Vipul's death from Shorbani. Not because no one else had cared enough to inform her of it. But because Shorbani hinted at a friendship that had never existed. She wanted to respond with a terse mail saying, "We were never friends, and certainly never close to one another. What is wrong with you?" But in the end, her mail contained just one sentence. "Thank you for letting me know." She put the kettle to boil and made herself a large cup of tea. She switched on the television and sat in front of it without registering anything. She got up after a few hours because her stomach rumbled with hunger. She realized that the afternoon was over and she had not had lunch. On an impulse, she felt her cheeks. The wetness surprised her. She had shed tears without being aware of them. She walked up to the mirror in the bedroom and smiled. The kind of smile her mirror was used to holding before an evening out to test whether the lipstick would smudge. A smile bereft of any joy, she dialed for a pizza. Thank you.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the writer Vijay Nair, reading from his novel Master of Life Skills. Seems like, you know, in your work, you are often addressing the unspoken truths that are often uncomfortable. Would you say that that's accurate?
I think I've done a little too much of it now, and you know, I would now like to write a book which is really happy.
Oh, really?
Which makes everyone happy, but I don't really think that I would be able to.
How would you turn around and do that?
That's a theme that I'm trying to explore in the novel that I'm writing currently. You know, if there is actually something called happiness in its purity, or whether, you know, we just have to be content with one kind of it and it's always at the expense of something else. So I guess that's how happy a book of mine can be, that it can be only one kind of happiness.
You also talked about writing as an instinctive, intuitive thing, that knowing the tools of writing doesn't help you to articulate your truths. Can you talk about what does help you to articulate your truths?
Listening. I think listening helps a lot. I have to confess I'm a shameless eavesdropper. Mm-hmm. Wherever I go, I'm, you know, listening to other people's conversations in mm-hmm. cafes. And sometimes you also listen to what is not being said. I call my writing intuitive because I feel that I can read silences. Of course, how accurate I am in that reading is anybody's guess. But
there was one thing I definitely wanted to ask you about. Was you were talking about writing the play Weeds, and in which lovers exchanged letters after 9/11, and that the play had been called sentimental and didactic, mm-hmm. but that. Your response was that war is an act of terror, call for sentiments sometimes to break through that kind of horror. Can you talk just for a minute about that? You know, are you saying that you were intentionally sentimental in your play to sort of break through the horror of that tragedy?
I don't know whether I had to force myself to be sentimental, because in India, terror attacks are so common. I mean, like, you know, you hear of at least one big one every year. And I think of them as the worst tragedy that can be perpetuated on people, because, you know, you see somebody from your family going out to work in the morning and then that person doesn't return. I mean, like, they take a train or they take a cab or they just happen to be at some place. And I don't even think that that particular death is written for them, but, you know, they just find themselves more by accident than by design at a particular place. And then they are not there. And how do you then cope with the emptiness, with, you know, with the fact that someone you thought would be around in the evening just doesn't come back home?
Yeah.
So whether it was New York or whether it was Bombay or whether, you know, and I think that there were a few Indians, too, who lost their lives in WTC. And so this whole thing of nationality or borders or none of that makes sense when tragedies of this scale happen.
Okay. I think we have time for a last short piece that you have.
Thank you, Jen.
If you wouldn't mind reading it. And if you could tell us where it's from, that would be great.
The last small piece that I'm reading is from a play of mine called The Window, which is published in my collection of plays, The Gloomy Rabbit and Other Plays. It's a set of monologues. The play is a set of monologues by a couple, the wife and then her husband, and about it. It's really the story of their marriage. So I'm going to be reading a small passage from the husband's monologue. His name is Anoop, and he says, "That is their story, the one I gave them, about you taking this vacation in the States. Except no one seems to believe it any longer, not after 7 months and 23 days. I've shut the window. I no longer sit on that chair. I do not sleep. I walk around all night. Everything here has a story to tell. Your story, as a bride, as a wife, as a daughter-in-law, as a mother, as all the roles you played and did not play, all the conversations and all the silences. I have discovered something. I have no form, no substance. I have no words either in prose or in poetry. I have no story to tell of my own. Everything, including the children, is yours. I could have gone and life would have continued, but you were life itself. Come back, please." Thank you.
It's the writing of Vijay Nair. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Jen. Thank you.
It's great. You've been listening to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a biweekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the Arts Entertainment Newsweekly, published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty and Ellen Wadey. Our sound engineers are Amy Sutton, Ziggy Edwards, and Laurie Wilson. Please tune in every Wednesday night at 7 for Prosody, 91.3 WYEP.